This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Good morning, everyone. This is Steve Phelan, along with Kathy Reisner, reading to you from the second hour of the Cincinnati Inquirer on this Thursday, the 9th of May. We're going to start off with the TV listings, but then we'll bring you obituaries and horoscopes and advice columns and all kinds of interesting stuff before we segue on over to the Nation and World section. First of all, though, TV listings. If you're watching NBC on Channel 5, you're going to see the Today Show at 10 o'clock, followed by Tamron Hall at 11. Then there's some news at 12, Access Hollywood at 12:30, and NBC News Daily at 1 o'clock. It's Sherry Shepherd at 2, Jennifer Hudson at 3, and then 3.5 hours of news, 4 o'clock until 7:30 when Access Hollywood comes on. That's followed by the Law and Order block with Law and Order at 8 o'clock, Law and Order SVU at 9 o'clock, and Law and Order Organized Crime at 10. There's some news at 11 and The Tonight Show at 11:30. On ABC Channel 9, it's Cincy Lifestyle at 10 o'clock, followed by Pawn Stars at 10:30. The View is on at 11, news at 12, and then the third hour of Good Morning America shows up at 1 o'clock. It's General Hospital at 2, Kelly Clarkson at 3. News goes from 4 till 7:30 when Extra comes on, and that's followed by 911 at 8 o'clock, Grey's Anatomy at 9 o'clock, and Station 19 at 10 o'clock. News is on at 11, and then Jimmy Kimmel at 11:30. If you're watching CBS on Channel 12, you'll see Let's Make a Deal at 10 o'clock and The Price is Right at 11. You've got news at 12, then the Young and Restless go from 12:30 to 1:30 when the Bold and Beautiful show up. It's The Talk at 2, Dateline at 3. News goes from 4 o'clock till 7 o'clock when Inside Edition comes on, and that'll be followed by Entertainment Tonight at 7:30. As usual, it's Young Sheldon at 8 o'clock, Ghosts at 8:30, So Help Me Todd at 9, and Elsbeth at 10. Then the news comes on at 11, followed by The Late Show with Stephen Colbert at 11:30. On Channel 20, that's Sin CW, we've got the weather at 10. Ooh, and did we have some weather yesterday? And then Verdict at 10:30, Dr. Phil at 11, and Judge Mathis at 12. It's Cutler's Court at 1 o'clock, Verdict at 1:30, Equal Justice at 2, and then Jerry Springer at 3 o'clock. Paternity Court is on at 4, Justice for the People at 5, and then The Neighbors at 6 o'clock. It's Modern Family at 7, Patty Stanger at 8, Lovers and Liars at 9, and then The National Desk from 10 until 12. On Fox Channel 19, we've got news all the way from 10 o'clock till 12 o'clock when Investigative TV comes on. Then it's Now in the Natty at 12:30, Drew Barrymore at 1 o'clock, and of course Judge Judy at 2. We've got some news that goes all the way from 3 o'clock till 7 o'clock when Wheel of Fortune comes on, followed by Jeopardy at 7:30. Next Level Chef is on at 8 o'clock, Lego Masters at 9 o'clock, and then the news goes from 10 until 11:30, after which Friends comes on. On public television, WCET has Sesame Street at 10 o'clock, then Work It Out, Wombats at 10:30. It's Don Quixote at 11, Peterific and Pinkalicious at 11:30, Eleanor Wonders Why at 12, and then Nature Cat at 12:30. It's Curious George at 1 o'clock, Xavier Riddle at 1:30, then Antiques Roadshow at 2. Cobra is on at 3 o'clock, Nature at 4, and then at 5 o'clock, it's A Brief History of the Future. The BBC News is on at 6, The Day at 6:30, then PBS NewsHour at 7. It's This Old House at 8 o'clock, Ask This Old House at 8:30, then Call the Midwife at 9. 10 o'clock, it's Masterpiece Theater with Howard's End, then we have Amanpour & Company at 11. Speaking of 11, we've got Channel 11, which is MyNet 64. They've got Divorce Court on at 10 o'clock, followed by Judge Mathis at 11 and Hot Bench at 12. Then it's time for Pictionary at 1 o'clock, followed by Karamo Brown at 2, Maury Povich at 3, and Steve Wilkos at 4. At 5 o'clock, it's Person, Place, or Thing, followed by 3 half-hour episodes of Family Feud at 5:30, 6, and 6:30. Then, of course, it's The Big Bang Theory at 7, Young Sheldon at 7:30, Dateline at 8 o'clock, Chicago PD at 9 o'clock, some news at 10, and then we're back in the same old cycle of The Big Bang Theory at 10:30 and Young Sheldon at 11. Finally, that's followed by 2 and a Half Men at 11:30.
The obituaries this morning begin with Beresford, B-E-R-E-S-F-O-R-D. Michael Edward Beresford was 73, from Cincinnati. No funeral home listed. Daly, D-A-L-E-Y. Rebecca Alice Daly was 91, from Anderson Township. T.P. White & Sons Funeral Homes Handling. Moskowitz, M-O-S-K-O-W-I-T-Z. Tamar Tommy Moskowitz was 87, from Cincinnati. Weil Kahn Funeral Home Handling. Smith, S-M-I-T-H. Donna Sue Smith was 80, from Latonia. Swindler and Curran Funeral Home in Latonia Handling. And Wagner, W-A-G-N-E-R. Karen S. Kitchy Wagner was 80, from Cincinnati. Spring Grove Funeral Homes Handling.
Let's talk horoscopes. If you are an Aries, March 21 through April 19, it says here, the moon's suspicious connection to Mars finds you standing up and being counted. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. Know your worth. As the moon and Mars connect, decisions made today are in alignment with your conscience and confidence. Gemini, May 21 through June 21. As the moon and Mars harmonize, you find the balance between competition and cooperation. Cancer, June 22 through July 22. As the moon and Mars harmonize, compassion motivates a professional mission, whatever that means. Leo, July 23 through August 22. Bringing people together, rally your peers around an idea or objective as the moon and Mars harmoniously connect. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. Your tenacity and drive turn your superiors' heads as the moon and Mars harmonize. Libra, September 23 through October 23. Working together, you and a partner are a winning team as the moon and Mars harmoniously connect. Scorpio, October 24 through November 21. Workplace successes, trusting your intuitive powers helps you achieve a business win as the moon and Mars harmonize. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. As the moon and Mars harmonize, take the initiative to further a romantic connection. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. If you want it done right, you have to do it yourself as the moon and Mars harmonize. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. Today's harmonious connection between the moon and Mars is perfect for socializing and networking. And finally, Pisces, February 19 through March 20. As the moon and Mars harmonize, an impulse buy is well deserved. You've worked hard and deserve something nice. Okay, let's talk about people who were born on May the 9th. They include director-producer James L. Brooks, who's turning 84. Singer-guitarist Richie Furay from Buffalo Springfield is 80. Actor-producer Candace Bergen, 78. Singer-musician Billy Joel, 75. Actor Ally Mills, 73. Singer Dave Gahan from Depeche Mode is 62. Actor Sonia Sohn, age 60. Rapper actor Ghostface Kalia is, say, 54. Singer Tamia is 49. Actor Rosario Dawson, 45. Singer-musician Andrew W.K. is 45 also. And actor Grace Gummer is 38.
Carolyn Hax's column this morning is titled, "Was It Wrong to Approach Late Wife's Pal for No Commitment Sex?" And this is adapted from an online discussion. Dear Carolyn, I lost my wife last year to breast cancer, and it was the most devastating thing I've ever experienced. I can't imagine ever wanting a romantic relationship with another woman. I have been missing the physical side of a relationship, so I approached a friend, Margot, about a, quote, friends with benefits situation. Margot's been friends with me and my wife for almost 20 years. We helped her get the courage to leave her emotionally abusive marriage and stood by her through the bitter divorce. This was about 10 years ago. Since then, Margot hasn't dated much. She kept saying she didn't think she'd ever want a full-blown relationship again. Because of that, I thought she might be interested in a friends with benefits with me, but she was really insulted when I brought it up. She said she thinks of me as a sibling and thought I felt the same way about her. She's been avoiding me lately. Two questions. Was I out of line to make that suggestion? And how do I fix this? Signed, Anonymous. Carolyn's response, I can see how the offer made perfect sense to you, but I hope you can see that you didn't, apparently, give due thought to the possibility that she might see it differently, that the widower of her dear late old friend just hit her up for a booty call. Yikes. Instead, you stopped at the similarities because that served you. Plus, you are grieving your wife intensely and maybe did not properly consider that her best friend would also feel devastated by her own grief. So in these senses, yes, you were out of line for not giving full consideration to Margot's feelings before you propositioned her. The way to fix this is to say this explicitly when you apologize, that you let your loneliness swamp your judgment, and you failed to consider her feelings before you spoke up. She might not be able to unsee you in this way, so even a proper apology might not revive the friendship. But it's important to deliver it anyway. Last thing, for what it's worth. If Margot were to ask me how to handle your apology, I'd advise her to accept it and forgive you. People racked with grief and loneliness and not being touched for months, sometimes years, are susceptible to yearnings that overwhelm their judgment. I do feel for you, and I am very sorry for your loss. And some readers' thoughts. I had a similar situation occur, except that I was propositioned at the funeral by an older man whom I had regarded as a mentor and father figure. I was able to be kind, calm, and understanding of the grief-fueled error in judgment, but I also ended any further contact. Knowing that he had assessed me in that way made it impossible to continue any relationship. You may not be able to fix anything in a way that makes your former friend comfortable ever again. Another loss, and it's sad, but she doesn't have to fix this for you. And another thought, I had a male friend ask me for that. I said no and chalked it up to grief and loneliness. I hope she comes to that realization as well. You can email Carolyn at tellme@washpost.com.
What to watch? Content by TV Weekly. Let's start off with a new series on Netflix called Bodkin. This darkly comedic thriller follows a motley crew of podcasters who set out to investigate three mysterious disappearances that occurred years earlier in a seemingly idyllic coastal Irish town. But once they start pulling at threads, they discover a story much bigger
and weirder than they ever could have imagined. They try to discern fact from fiction, not only about the case, but also about their colleagues, and most painfully, themselves. Will Forte leads the cast. Next, an original film, Mother of the Bride, on Netflix. Brooke Shields leads this rom-com as Lana, whose daughter Emma, played by Miranda Cosgrove, returns from abroad and drops the bombshell that she's getting married in Thailand in a month. Things only get worse when Lana learns that the man who captured Emma's heart is the son of the man who broke hers years ago. Benjamin Bratt, Rachel Harris, Sean Teal, and Chad Michael Murray also star. Next, Love Undercover, a new series on Peacock. Five international soccer stars leave behind their lavish lifestyles and travel to the U.S. in hopes of finding love, quote, undercover, with women who know nothing of their fame or fortune in this new unscripted dating series. Three episodes are available today and May 16th. The final four episodes drop on May 23rd. Then there's Young Sheldon on CBS at 8 o'clock. With back-to-back new episodes of Young Sheldon airing tonight, a little snip and teaching old dogs. George Sr. secretly gets a vasectomy. Then, in, quote, a new home and a traditional Texas torture, Sheldon worries about losing his childhood home as he prepares for his move to California. Then there's Next Level Chef, a season finale on Fox at 8 o'clock. The final three chefs race against the clock to craft a sensational three-course meal in the season three finale, The Final Level. The winner receives $250,000 and a year-long mentorship. Next, we have Law and Order on NBC at 8 o'clock. Shaw and Riley investigate the death of a therapist with a long list of troubled clients. Then there's Grey's Anatomy on ABC at 9 o'clock. A complex case brings back painful memories for Simone. Then there's Down Home Fab, a season finale on HGTV at 9 o'clock. Chelsea and Cole must create a groundbreaking style, combining a classic and minimal aesthetic with a glamorous touch throughout the massive renovation. And we wind up with Law & Order Organized Crime at 10 o'clock on NBC. Stabler and Randall give Joe Jr. the choice to get clean or go to prison. Meanwhile, Vargas and Jet's plan to cut off Emery's smuggling routes leads to a dangerous rescue attempt.
And in People News, Mary J. Blige asserts herself with Strength of a Woman. Mary J. Blige wants attendees at her Strength of a Woman Festival and Summit to walk away feeling, quote, an overload of happiness. The queen of hip-hop soul, never less than frank, is determined to help women feel empowered and elevated. Mindsets she struggled with since the 1992 release of her debut album, What's the 411, as she navigated a male-dominated industry. More than three decades later, Blige, 53, is a bona fide icon with 9 Grammy Awards, 42 singles as a lead artist, album sales north of 50 million, and upcoming induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Next, the South by Southwest Festival to launch European edition in London next year. South by Southwest, the music, technology, and film festival held annually in Austin, Texas, is coming to London next year in a new European edition. The inaugural South by Southwest London will take place in June 2025 in the English capital's trendy eastern area of Shoreditch. Then we have, did Miss USA's resignation post contain a hidden message? Noelia Voigt's decision to relinquish her Miss USA crown has sparked a flurry of online speculation after fans noticed a strange detail about her statement. Voigt, who was awarded Miss USA in September 2023, announced in a statement Monday on Instagram that she has decided to resign from the title, writing, "In life, I strongly value the importance of making decisions that feel best for you and your mental health." But in the comments of her post and elsewhere on social media, users notice that taking the first letter in each sentence of her statement reveals the phrase, "I am silenced," though this discounts the last three sentences, the first letters of which spell hip. It was not immediately clear whether the message was intentional. And finally, Hillary Duff gives birth to baby number 4, daughter Towns. Good things come to those who wait, and Hillary Duff's mommy patience has paid off. The actress has welcomed her 4th child, Duff revealed in an Instagram post Tuesday. The post featured candid black and white photos of Duff's water birth.
Biden pauses arms shipment to Israel. Here's the first story in Nation and World. Concern expressed over fate of civilians in Rafah. The Biden administration has paused the shipment of 3,500 bombs to Israel over concerns they could be used in a major military operation in the southern Gaza city of Rafah. President Joe Biden has been grappling with a pledge to support the Israeli military. It should be Israeli military. No matter what, amid concerns that the U.S. ally is not doing enough to protect civilian lives in Gaza. Biden's administration began a review of certain weapons transfers to Israel last month, a senior U.S. official said. The president then paused a shipment of 1,800 2,000-pound bombs and 1,700 500-pound bombs last week as Israel ramped up plans for a ground invasion of the city. The pause came amid a push from Democratic lawmakers to obtain fresh assurances the ally is not violating U.S. policy and international humanitarian law in Gaza, and on the heels of a bipartisan bill that Congress passed and the president signed, authorizing more military aid to Israel. The White House reiterated Tuesday that Biden's support for Israel is ironclad, and the president has himself said there is no red line over which he would cut off all aid to Israel. But with Israel drawing closer to making a decision on Rafah, the Biden administration says its concerns about humanitarian access have not been fully addressed. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has repeatedly said that an invasion of Rafah, overwhelmed by more than 1 million Palestinians who fled the violence elsewhere in the enclave, is crucial to crushing Hamas. The Israeli military said Wednesday it had uncovered Hamas infrastructure in several locations in eastern Rafah, and its troops were conducting targeted raids. Netanyahu has pledged to destroy Hamas since October, when the militant group led the assault on Israel that killed almost 1,200 people. Almost 35,000 Palestinians have died in the resulting Israeli attack. The enclave's health ministry reports. Israel claims to have killed more than 12,000 militants. Gaza health workers said Wednesday they uncovered at least 49 bodies in a mass grave at Al-Shifa Hospital, according to a medical officer and Hamas authorities. The Gaza City facility was raided in March by Israeli forces. Hamas announced Monday it had accepted a 3-phase truce offer, but Israel said the proposal had been altered and rejected it. White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre said Tuesday that the White House believes Israeli and Hamas negotiators were in a position to, quote, close the gap between their positions. CIA Director William Burns is in Cairo representing the U.S. at ceasefire negotiations involving Qatar, Egypt, and Israel, with Qatar serving as an intermediary for Hamas. Biden warned Netanyahu in an early April call that the U.S. could make policy changes if the country did not take concrete steps to address his administration's humanitarian concerns. In a briefing with reporters on Tuesday, John Kirby, the White House's National Security Communications Advisor, said, quote, a lot more work needs to be done for Israel to meet the Biden administration's expectations. Quote, clearly there's still great humanitarian need and great risk for the people that are trying to get that assistance to those in need, he said. But since that conversation, the Israelis have taken steps to open up additional crossings, and the U.S. has observed a sustained increase in the number of aid trucks. Quote, and we had seen evidence that they were working harder to improve their deconfliction processes to restore some of the trust that they lost with humanitarian aid organizations on the ground, he said. But I again want to stress it's not enough. We need to see it sustained. And in the case of Rafah and in the case of Kerem Shalom, we want to see these openings restored as soon as possible. The Kerem Shalom border crossing between Gaza and Israel reopened for aid deliveries on Wednesday after it was closed over the weekend because of Hamas rocket fire, the Israeli military said. Jean-Pierre told reporters Tuesday that Israel would open the crossing Wednesday to facilitate aid shipments after Israeli forces took control of it ahead of their planned assault on parts of Rafah. Over 10,000 Palestinians have left Rafah since Monday, said Juliet Touma, spokesperson for UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Other officials have put the number as high as 50,000. UNRWA Director of Planning Sam Rose, speaking on the BBC, said half of the 100,000 people in Israel's targeted neighborhoods of Rafah are children, and most have already been displaced multiple times. There is nowhere safe for them to go, he told the BBC. Quote, the so-called safe zone cannot fit any more people, Rose said. Half of the safe zone is on a sand dune, which can't accommodate people for any length of time. The other half is in Khan Yunis, which has been subject to savage bombardment for the last couple of weeks. The intensifying attacks on Rafah have left one of three hospitals unable to function, and the others with only 3 days of fuel left. World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Wednesday, the closure of the border crossing there continues to prevent the UN from bringing in fuel, he said. Tedros warned that delivery of humanitarian aid was impeded and that without fuel, all humanitarian operations will stop. Quote, at a time when fragile humanitarian operations urgently require expansion, the Rafah military operation is further limiting our ability to reach thousands of people who have been living in dire conditions without adequate food, sanitation, health services, and security, Tedros said in a social media post. Meanwhile, aid for Gaza was being loaded onto a ship in Cyprus on Wednesday in what was expected to be the first cargo to be delivered using a U.S. pier built to expedite supplies to the besieged enclave.
Poll. Campus protests split Democrats. Majority of respondents worry about violence. Protests at American colleges over the Israeli-Hamas war in Gaza are dividing Democrats and unifying Republicans as fears of campus violence loom. An exclusive USA Today Suffolk University poll finds complicated attitudes toward the protesters, their motives, and their tactics. On this, there is agreement. Two-thirds of voters, 67%, express concern that the demonstrations and police response will end up leading to violent confrontations. Both the policy and political challenges are particularly steep for President Joe Biden. Last week, he walked a careful line, condemning violence on college campuses while defending the free speech rights of protesters. He has tried to balance support for Israel with calls for more humane treatment of Palestinians in Gaza, who have seen families killed and communities destroyed in assaults that followed the October 7th Hamas attacks in Israel. Famine is a rising threat. I think it's genocide, and the way that they control water and humanitarian aid is unethical, and I just don't see, like, how they are allowed, said Tiffany Batten, 43, an independent from Chicago who backs Biden. She was among those surveyed. I am thrilled to see young adults practicing their civil rights, freedom of speech and assembly, and they're doing it in a pretty peaceful way. I believe in peaceful protest, but it's getting a little out of hand, said Frances Spitali, 60, a Democrat from Charleston, South Carolina, who also supports Biden. Since the October 7th attacks, Israel has been, quote, a little extreme in their tactics, but they have to defend themselves. Biden voters are split. 30% support the protests, 39% agree with their demands but oppose their tactics, and 20% oppose them. Trump voters are united. 78% oppose the protesters. Just 5% support them, and 9% support their demands but oppose their tactics. The poll of 1,000 registered voters taken by landline and cell phone from April 30th to May 3rd has a margin of error plus or minus 3.1 percentage points. Trump calls police crackdowns, quote, a beautiful thing to watch. For Donald Trump, the issue has become a unifying force in a GOP that has been split on abortion and other issues. He has called the protesters, quote, radical left lunatics, and praised the police crackdowns on campus encampments at Columbia University and the University of California, Los Angeles as, quote, a beautiful thing to watch. The crisis in the Mideast has become a talking point for Republicans against Biden. So has the footage of police arresting demonstrators and dismantling encampments as the protests spread to colleges across the country. This is all on Biden, declared Debbie Walta, 67, a Republican retiree from Helena, Montana. Trump left office. All of a sudden, now, here's a problem. He said college administrators and law enforcement officials, quote, should be responding with an iron fist if there is violence. Among voters who tend to be in the GOP coalition, most of those surveyed oppose the demonstrations. 77% of conservatives, 52% of whites, and 52% of men. Among key groups that Democrats rely on in national elections, there is no such majority consensus. Younger voters, those under 35, are a targeted demographic for Democrats. They are the age group most supportive of the protests. 35% of them and another 27% support their demands but oppose their tactics. The oldest voters, those 65 and older, is the age group that, along with those 35 to 49, is the most supportive of Biden. They are also the one most aligned against the protests. 54% oppose them, and just 10% support them. Swing voters illustrate the political conundrum. Among those voters who now support a candidate but say they might change their minds before Election Day, 24% support the protests, 24% support them but oppose their tactics, and 41% oppose them. Overall, 19% of those surveyed support the protests, 24% agree with their demands but oppose the way they are conducting themselves, and 46% oppose them. Republicans and Democrats have strikingly different views of the protesters' motives and beliefs. Republicans, by nearly 3-1, say the demonstrations reflect anti-Semitism. Democrats, by 2-1, say they don't. Republicans, by more than 3-1, say a majority of the demonstrators are pro-Hamas. Democrats, by 7-1, say they aren't. I'm a free speech absolutist, so any of these kids being arrested is sickening, said Brent Watchorn, 36, a shipping clerk from Denver. An independent, He supports Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in the presidential race. College administrators should, quote, negotiate and actually, you know, hear their complaints and address them. Don't just stand there and say, oh, they're being anti-Semitic. It's ridiculous, end quote. Watchhorn said Biden should be on the picket line with them. I think they're ridiculous, Stephen Harrison, 52, a small business owner from Manhattan, Montana, said of the protesters. If you look at it from a worldview, you know, who runs Palestine? Hamas is a terrorist organization. So by proxy, supporting that region or supporting a free Palestine is supporting a terrorist organization. He warned that violence could be ahead on American campuses. While there have been clashes between police and demonstrators on some campuses, most of the protests have been peaceful. Somebody throws a punch, somebody pushes somebody, and then the next thing you know, you got 25 cops beating up three kids, Harris said. I don't think that's right either. But you know what? Consequences.
U.S. looks to guard AI software from China. Government weighs new regulations, sources say. From Washington, the Biden administration is poised to open up a new front in its effort to safeguard U.S. artificial intelligence from China, with preliminary plans to place guardrails around the most advanced AI models, the core software of artificial intelligence systems like ChatGPT, sources said. The Commerce Department is considering a new regulatory push to restrict the export of proprietary or closed-source AI models whose software and the data it is trained on are kept under wraps, three people familiar with the matter said. Any action would complement a series of measures put in place over the last 2 years to block the export of sophisticated AI chips to China in an effort to slow Beijing's development of the cutting-edge technology for military purposes. Even so, it will be hard for regulators to keep pace with the industry's fast-moving developments. The Commerce Department declined to comment. The Chinese embassy in Washington did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Currently, nothing is stopping U.S. AI giants like Microsoft-backed OpenAI, Alphabet's Google DeepMind, and rival Anthropic, which have developed some of the most powerful closed-source AI models, from selling them to almost anyone in the world without government oversight. Government and private sector researchers worry U.S. adversaries could use the models, which mine vast amounts of text and images to summarize information and generate content, to wage aggressive cyber attacks or even create potent biological weapons. To develop an export control on AI models, the sources say the U.S. may turn to a threshold contained in an AI executive order issued last October that is based on the amount of computing power it takes to train a model. When that level is reached, a developer must report its AI model development plans and provide test results to the Commerce Department. That computing power threshold could become the basis for determining what AI models would be subject to export restrictions, according to two U.S. officials and another source briefed on the discussions. They declined to be named because details have not been made public. If used, it would likely only restrict the export of models that have yet to be released, since none are thought to have reached the threshold yet, although Google's Gemini Ultra is seen as being close, according to Epic AI, a research institute tracking AI trends. The agency is far from finalizing a rule proposal, the sources stressed. But the fact that such a move is under consideration shows the government is seeking to close gaps in its effort to thwart Beijing's AI ambitions, despite serious challenges to imposing a regulatory regime on the fast-evolving technology. As the Biden administration looks to competition with China and the dangers of sophisticated AI, AI models, quote, are obviously one of the tools, one of the potential choke points that you need to think about here, said Peter Harrell, a former National Security Council official. Whether you can, in fact, practically speaking, turn it into an export controllable choke point remains to be seen, he added. The American intelligence community, think tanks, and academics are increasingly concerned about risks posed by foreign bad actors gaining access to advanced AI capabilities. Researchers at Griffin Scientific and RAND Corporation noted that advanced AI models can provide information that could create biological weapons. The Department of Homeland Security said cyber actors would likely use AI to, quote, develop new tools to, quote, enable larger scale, faster, efficient, and more evasive cyber attacks in its 2024 Homeland Threat Assessment. Any new export rules could also target other countries, and one of the sources said, quote, the potential explosion for AI's use and exploitation is radical, and we're having actually a very hard time kind of following that. Brian Holmes, an official at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, said at an export control gathering in March, flagging China's advancement as a particular concern. To address these concerns, the U.S. has taken measures to stem the flow of American AI chips and the tools to make them to China. It also proposed a rule to require U.S. cloud companies to tell the government when foreign customers use their services to train powerful AI models that could be used for cyber attacks. But so far, it has not addressed the AI models themselves. Alan Estevez, who oversees U.S. export policy at the Department of Commerce, said in December that the agency was looking at options for regulating open-source large language model exports before seeking industry feedback. Tim Fist, an AI policy expert at Washington, D.C.-based think tank CNAS, says the threshold, quote, is a good temporary measure until we develop better methods of measuring the capabilities and risks of new models. The threshold is not set in stone. One of the sources said Commerce might end up with a lower floor, coupled with other factors like the type of data or potential uses for the AI model, such as the ability to design proteins that could be used to make a biological weapon. Regardless of the threshold, AI model experts will be hard to control. Many models are open source, meaning they would remain beyond the purview of export controls under consideration. Even imposing controls on the more advanced proprietary models will prove challenging, as regulators will likely struggle to define the right criteria to determine which models should be controlled at all, this said, noting that China is likely only about 2 years behind the United States in developing its own AI software.
Russia strikes Ukraine power grid again. Russian missiles and drones struck nearly a dozen Ukrainian energy infrastructure facilities on Wednesday, causing serious damage at three Soviet-era thermal power plants and blackouts in multiple regions, officials said. Ukraine's Air Force said it shot down 39 of 55 missiles and 20 of 21 attack drones used for the attack, which piles more pressure on the energy system more than 2 years since Russia launched its full-scale invasion. Another massive attack on our energy industry, Energy Minister Yermin Galashenko wrote on the Telegram app. Two people were injured in the Kyiv region, and one was hurt in the Kirovohrad region, Interior Minister Ihor Klemenko said. Galashenko said power generation and transmission facilities in the Poltava, Kirovohrad, Zaporizhia, Lviv, Ivano-Frankivsk, and Vinnytsia regions were targeted. Sorry for those pronunciations. Some 350 rescuers were trying to minimize the damage to energy facilities, 30 homes, public transport vehicles, cars, and a fire station, the Interior Ministry said. Ukraine's national power grid operator Ukrenergo, said it was forced to introduce electricity cutoffs in 9 regions, adding that it might have to expand them nationwide during peak hours. Officials urged Ukrainians to limit consumption. Russia's defense ministry said it struck Ukraine's military, industrial complex, and energy facilities with drones and high-precision missiles in what it described as retaliation for Kyiv's strike on Russian energy facilities. As a result of the strike, Ukraine's capabilities for the output of military products, as well as the transfer of Western weapons and military equipment to the line of contact, have been significantly reduced, the ministry said. In an online address to mark the day Ukraine commemorates the end of World War II, President Volodymyr Zelensky said no military targets had been struck in Wednesday's attack and voiced frustration over the West's handling of Russia. He singled out what he said was the West's limited progress in curbing Russian energy revenue, and some countries that attended President Vladimir Putin's inauguration for a fifth term in the Kremlin on Tuesday. Quote, "And everyone on earth knows history and remembers how to fight Nazism. When humanity unites, opposes Hitler instead of buying his oil and coming to his inauguration," Zelensky said. Ukraine has stepped up drone attacks on Russian refineries this year, despite apparent objections by the United States, trying to find a pressure point against the Kremlin, whose forces are slowly advancing in the eastern Donbas region. Ukrainian strikes on Russian refineries may have disrupted more than 15% of Russian oil refining capacity, a NATO military alliance official has said. After pounding the energy system in the first winter of the war, Russia renewed its aerial assault on the grid in March this year, as Ukraine was running low on stocks of sophisticated Western air defense missiles. The government has set up a task force to prepare for the upcoming heating season, Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal said. "We will do everything so that in the coming autumn and winter, all Ukrainian houses have light and heat, and businesses have access to electricity," Shmyhal said. Officials did not name the facilities hit on Wednesday, part of a policy of wartime secrecy that Kyiv says is needed to prevent Russia using the information for further strikes. But Lviv Governor Maxim Kotysky said Russia attacked a natural gas storage facility in his region in the west of the country, Radio Free Europe / Radio Liberty reported. In the central Poltava region, an energy infrastructure facility was hit by a drone, sparking a fire. Poltava Regional Government Filip Pronin said. The regional governors of Vinnytsia and Zaporizhia said separately that critical civilian infrastructure facilities were damaged. Officials in the southern Kherson region said the railway infrastructure was damaged in the attack. The Kremlin on Wednesday said it had no comment on Ukrainian assertions that Kyiv caught Russian agents plotting the assassination of Zelensky, but said that it was hardly likely to be accurate information. Ukraine's State Security Service said on Tuesday it caught two agents for Russia who planned to kill Zelensky and other top officials as, quote, a gift for Russian President Vladimir Putin as he was sworn in for a new term. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said he had no comment on the assertion, but added that it was unlikely to be accurate information. Russia also said on Wednesday that sending NATO troops into Ukraine would potentially be extremely dangerous, and Moscow was closely watching a Ukrainian petition that called for such an intervention. The petition, posted on the Ukrainian president's website, says Ukraine should ask the United States, Britain, and other countries to send troops to help it repel Russia's invasion. "The Kyiv regime is quite unpredictable," Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said when asked about it in his daily briefing. We have repeatedly said that direct intervention on the ground in this conflict by the military of NATO countries potentially carries enormous danger. So we consider this an extremely challenging provocation, nothing less. And of course, we are watching this very carefully. It was unclear if the petition would gather the required number of votes, 25,000, to require Zelensky to respond by either approving or rejecting it. As of Wednesday morning, it had attracted 1,594 votes. NATO has backed Ukraine in the war by providing it with increasingly powerful weapons, including tanks and long-range missiles, but has not intervened directly with troops, something that U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin have both warned could lead to World War III.
Georgia appeals court to consider ousting Willis. Excuse me. The Georgia State Court of Appeals on Wednesday agreed to hear the appeal of former President Donald Trump as to whether Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis should be disqualified from his election fraud case for improper conduct. The court granted the application for what's known as interlocutory appeal without comment, saying that Trump and at least 8 co-defendants have 10 days to file their formal appeal. That means the appellate court will hear the case before the trial gets underway, rather than afterward. The appeal could significantly delay the trial, possibly until after the November 5th election. Scott McAfee, the presiding judge in the Georgia case, has not set a trial date. He has said he will allow trial preparations to go forward while the appeal proceeds. Quote, President Trump looks forward to presenting interlocutory arguments to the Georgia Court of Appeals as to why the case should be dismissed and Fulton County DA Willis should be disqualified for her misconduct in this unjustified, unwarranted political persecution, said Steve Sadow, lead defense counsel for Trump in the case. District Attorney spokesman Jeff DeSantis said the office would have, quote, no comment at this point. Trump and the others face charges of conspiring to commit election fraud in an effort to overturn the results of the 2020 election in Georgia that Trump lost to President Joe Biden. It's the second court decision in 2 days that likely pushes back a trial date for Trump. On Tuesday, a federal judge in Florida postponed Trump's classified documents trial indefinitely. Furthermore, a third criminal prosecution is on hold pending a Supreme Court decision about the former president's potential immunity. A fourth criminal trial is underway in New York. A Trump campaign official filed a motion to remove Willis and the entire district attorney's office in January, alleging that Willis had a romantic relationship with Nathan Wade, a private lawyer she hired to oversee the sprawling election racketeering case. Willis and Wade admitted the affair, but denied wrongdoing, and said their affair started after she hired him to oversee the investigation in November of 2021. McAfee wrote a scathing ruling in March, saying Willis and Wade had severely damaged their credibility and, quote, an odor of mendacity remains about their testimony, USA Today previously reported. Nevertheless, McAfee found that the defendants failed to meet their burden in proving that Willis created, quote, an actual conflict of interest through her personal relationship and recurring travels with her lead prosecutor. He ruled that Willis could stay on the case as long as she forced Wade off the prosecution team. Wade subsequently resigned. Trump and a majority of the defendants sought to appeal that ruling, saying McAfee's ruling didn't go far enough and that Willis and the Fulton County District Attorney's Office should be disqualified and the case dismissed because of her alleged financial and ethical conflicts of interest.
Georgia governor signs election overhaul bill. The Republican governor of Georgia signed a bill Tuesday that makes dramatic changes to how elections are run in the battleground state, just months before the presidential election. Governor Brian Kemp signed the bill on Monday, spokesperson Garrison Douglas confirmed. Kemp did not issue a statement or comment on the bill. Kemp's announcement came at the end of one of the last days he had, under state law, to decide whether to sign or veto the bill. The Republican-led state legislature passed the bill at the end of March, and the American Civil Liberties Union of Georgia quickly promised to sue if Kemp signed it. Kemp's decision was highly anticipated, given his unique predicament in governing a state whose GOP lawmakers often follow former President Donald Trump. Trump rejects the results of the 2020 election, but Kemp refused to help Trump overturn his defeat in Georgia. Throughout the South, Republican legislatures have been making changes to election laws in response to unfounded allegations of a stolen 2020 election. The law creates a new process for how counties can remove people's voter registrations from the rolls, provisions that empowered grassroots activists on the right who have challenged thousands of registrations as ineligible, but which the Secretary of State's office has said provide limitations. The bill creates new procedures for how homeless people register to vote, requiring them to register at their county elections office, while another part of the bill allows counties, in the future, to take voters off the rolls if they are registered at non-residential addresses. The ACLU has said this would lead to disenfranchising them. The bill also allows voters to be removed from voter registration lists up to 45 days before an election. Federal law says states can't remove people from voter rolls within 90 days of an election. The bill also makes it easier for third-party candidates to get on the ballot, a provision that can help independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has challenged President Joe Biden to drop out of the race if he can't beat Trump. Well, that's about all we have time for this morning. We hope you enjoy your Thursday. Steve and I will be back with you tomorrow.